The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Did you ever wonder what it would be like to be one of the last people on Earth?
We're talking ghost town!
Who would you see?
There's nobody. I mean, there's nobody. Ah!
What would you do?
Hey, I'm sorry if the end of the world makes me a little nervous.
Where would you go?
The stars are open!
Well, get ready to find out, because the comet is coming into your orbit.
The legal drinking age is now 10, but... you will need ID. Let's be real.
It's the night of the comet.
What do you give me if I come back?
Texas?
Night of the comet.
I'll be taking requests from all you teenage comet zombies.
The night the teenagers ruled the world.
Yeah!
Night of the comet.
The burden of civilization is on us.
Fiction, isn't it?
Welcome to the They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We're part of the Main Damien Network. To find more from us, check out the website at themaindamien.com or visit us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at themaindamien. We're also now a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation, and you can find them at gvnation.com. Welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony DelVecchio, and with me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Myers. Say hello, gentlemen.
What's going on, everyone? Oh, hey,
Wow.
Me first.
Wow.
Oh.
Oof. You stay in line, young man.
I'm sorry.
How long have we been doing this?
Too long.
This is, I think, 55 episodes.
55 episodes. You know how it goes. Me first, then you. You do your bit, and then we start.
Well, maybe this is the bit. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh.
Are you sure?
It's kind
of
meta.
So fucking meta.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
There we go.
Yeah. How's everybody doing out there?
Yeah.
This is the top 10 countdown here.
What is Casey Kasem?
Yeah.
I'm not even going to pretend to do a shitty Casey Kasem accent.
What is going on? What is going on? Welcome back, everybody.
I'm very low energy right now. I'm very sorry.
You're going to have to snap out of it, sir.
Yeah. This one's on me.
He's already
calling a podcast. He's like, this is going to suck. We'll get it better next. This one's on me.
This is like, you know, when they say a pitcher doesn't have his best stuff and he's got to tough it out and, you know, just work, eat up some innings. That's going to be me tonight. I don't have my best stuff, but I'm going to try to give you five solid innings.
Yeah, you got to call Frank Thomas, get some of those Nugenics. And you say you're not low energy for next time.
Are you trying to say that I have ED? That's not.
No, you just said
is that
it.
The same thing?
Okay. I don't know. I don't know if that's a dick pill.
I thought it was.
You know, we would stick pills.
Yeah. So I take umbrage to that because I am solid. All right. I'm a virile. Well, not right now, but I'm a virile young man. All right. You don't want to know.
All right. Well, now that we've talked about Dan's dick. That means it's time to start the show.
that's the cue.
Yeah. And this episode, we're rolling right along once again with 31 Days of Horror. This week is a oldie but a goodie and probably a long forgotten one. It is 1984's Night of the Comet, directed by Tom Eberhardt. Guys, Night of the Comet. What are you feeling? What are you thinking?
I had seen this movie a few years ago. I don't remember it being so boring. But that's just that's me. I already know how you feel about it, Ant. But maybe again, listen. Maybe it's just me today. Very weird energy, weird vibe. This movie kind of played out like a bad PlayStation 1 game. It kind of reminded me of the first Resident Evil. Really bad graphics and really bad voiceover work. and just terrible dialogue. And it didn't do it for me this time. But I remember liking it in the past, so I don't know what happened. I think I'm just weird today.
Yeah. You're bringing a real weird energy into this podcast.
I'm bringing everyone down, right?
Did Jen watch it? Does she want to, you know, should we call in the relief pitcher?
No, she's actually asleep right now. So that's what this movie did to her. I don't think she watched a second of it.
Okay. Mark?
Yeah. So I had been introduced to this movie a few years ago, as most horror movies, by you, Ant. And I really like this movie, and I can't really put my finger on why. I wasn't bored by it. I was trying to, throughout the episode, throughout the movie, trying to remember, you know, what was going on and trying to put it all together. And it took a little while to get the pieces together, but I did enjoy it. There's still parts that confused me, and at times it feels like it was two different movies were written for it. But besides that, it's a movie I did look forward to when you announced it here.
Okay. Did you have a different experience with it since the first time, or is it more or less the same?
No, it's more or less the same. It was exactly how I remembered it. I mean, I think we saw it on, I don't know if it was something going on with my computer, but it felt like it was a better picture. Maybe I watched it on DVD the first time, not through streaming. So, you know,
sure.
But besides that, you know, it just felt like I was like, oh, okay. And then I had forgotten the twist about the middle part of the movie. I thought they were going to go in a different direction. And then once I saw, you know, one of the shots about midway through the movie, I was like, oh, okay. I remember how this ends, and went from there. But, you know, okay. There's some stuff I'd like to talk about once we get into the beginning of the plot, too, that I just noticed this time around.
Real quick. So I had mentioned that I'd seen this before, and this movie, you know, at face value, this has everything that I like in a horror movie. It has that B horror movie feel to it. So I don't know what it is. You know, it has everything that I like. It's just real hokey and cheesy. And I love 80s stuff. It's a decent 80s soundtrack. Mm-hmm. But again, this one movie, usually I can kind of place my finger on what I didn't like about it. But this one, I can't really. And again, I watched it a few years ago, and I remember enjoying it. And this time, I don't know, maybe it was just one of those things where on second viewing, it's like the reverse, where you hate a movie when you first see it. And then after a few times, like, oh, you know, this is kind of funny. I get it now. But yeah, this one, it didn't click for me this week.
Yeah. And then speaking of the soundtrack, I didn't remember it being high budget. I don't know if that's the correct word. I wasn't expecting to hear Cyndi Lauper.
You didn't.
That's not really Cyndi Lauper, though. Right. I mean, it's her
girls
song.
Girls Just Want to Have Fun, but it is not Cyndi Lauper.
Oh. I thought it was at first two, Mark, so you're not the only one. But then a little into the song, you realize I don't think that's her.
Before her voice came in, I was like, when it first started, I was like, hey, this is Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Like, this movie didn't really pay for Cyndi Lauper, did it?
That's my thought throughout the entire song.
And then as soon as I heard the voice, I was like, that's not her.
What was the budget on this? It was $700,000. Yeah.
That would probably be half of what it would cost to license Girls Just Want to Have Fun in 1984.
I have no idea how much it costs.
You got the sync. You got the two licenses. You got the publishing rights, and then there's the sync rights. They obviously bought one and not the other. But it was performed by Tammy Holbrook. Tammy Holbrook is the girl on Girls Just Want to Have Fun for this.
She fooled two of us.
Partially.
What was that?
Did you know this movie is also known as Teenage Mutant Horror Comet Zombies?
I believe that was the working title.
That's a pretty awesome title. Why didn't they stick with that?
Probably because there's like two zombies in this whole movie.
Oh, the one who jumps the main character in the beginning, right? And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
It made $14 million. That's pretty good on a $700,000 budget.
Yeah, I was surprised. That's awesome. I didn't realize that's a little sneaky hit.
Yeah. I'm surprised. Like, I don't understand why. Maybe something, nothing came out that week.
Maybe not. I don't know. I'd have to look at Box Office Mojo to see what weekend it opened up.
Yeah, not
the main
bad.
Character, Catherine Mary Stewart, she looks like someone I would assume that I knew, but she doesn't. She isn't.
Yeah, she's a plain Jane.
Yeah, she looks like what it is. She looks like Kirk Cameron's wife, who was on. She did a stint on Growing Pains as well as a few other things in the early 90s. Got that very similar look. But this girl did the voice of Moira in Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh.
Really?
There we go.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty. Oh, yeah, there it is. Yep. Oh, hold on one second. I apologize.
All right. Yeah, we're losing Dan because his dog is making some noise. But we will go on with Adam and hopefully we'll get him back very shortly.
Both of them kind of gave off that effect. Like, I have seen them in a whole bunch of stuff before, right? And you look at the names, you're like, maybe not.
Kelly Maroney was in Chopping Mall. If you've seen Chopping Mall, which I don't think you have.
No, I haven't.
She's also in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Okay.
But other than that.
Yeah. Nothing else, really. But yeah, the whole aesthetic of this movie with, I can't understand, and again, I'm not in production. I don't know if you have any insight into this, but I don't know how they were able to get some of the shots they did, you know, in terms of just the completely empty streets and all that they were in Los Angeles, right?
Yes, they were. And there's actually trivia on this. I'm going to pull it up right now. But essentially they just did it in the ass crack of dawn. When nobody was around, I think in the weekend, waiting to pull it up. But yeah, it was like they stole some shots while no one was there.
I was impressed that they were able to get, you know, those shots with just the clothes in the street and all that. Huh, that's a little impressive. That's how you work on a budget.
Yep. Having trouble finding it, but it's here somewhere. But yeah. It was the scenes of an empty Los Angeles were filmed in the morning on normal business days. The shots of the barren city were done quickly while the traffic was held up at stoplights.
Okay.
So there you go.
That makes sense.
Good old movie magic. I love this movie. I don't know why. I think to the point of Dan doesn't know why he didn't like it as much the second time as he liked it the first. I don't know why I like this movie as much as I like it. It's silly, not in the way like Return of the Living Dead, and maybe Return of the Living Dead has had an effect on Dan's viewing of this, because there are two very different energies. That is kind of, that's got that punk rock energy. It's kind of a mile a minute sort of thing, and now we're watching this, which is also a zombie movie, and it's just different. It's very subdued. It's very quiet. There are six characters in this movie, more or less, throughout the majority of it. Three major ones, and then a few come in here and there. So it is a quieter movie. It cribs a lot from the Dawn of the Dead. In terms of, like, they have a scene where they go to the mall, and they have a shopping montage very similar to Dawn of the Dead. I think, obviously, still Dawn of the Dead has much more death in that movie. But, it's fun. I love when they meet up with the stock boys. I think the line reading from the stock boy is insane.
Yeah, I don't know what he was going for.
I don't know. I love him for it, though. Yeah. Whatever he was going for. It was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, and with the budget they were on, it was like, we have to keep it.
He definitely made a choice.
Yeah, we don't have the money to change this.
No, but, I think people were all on board with what he was doing. I don't even think it was like, I guess we got to move on. I think it was like, that was great.
But yeah, the only thing I couldn't get about this, and you've seen it a lot more than I do, is I still can't realize, do they ever explain if the research people were studying the comet, or were they just happened to be there and then it just happened to be a mad scientist second act to this movie or whatever?
there's a line in the narration in the beginning of that, you know, some people think that this is very similar to, you know, the comet that passed by or killed the dinosaurs. Or some people think it's no coincidence, I think is the line. So I think that's to that you would that alludes to them being prepared for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it felt like I said, that was my comment about two different movies, was that it felt like one part of the movie was this comet hit and everyone disappeared, and the second part was about these researchers, and I didn't know if they ever linked them, or if it was just trying to show you two sides of, you know, I guess it was only a day, but like a post-apocalyptic area.
Yeah, I think they do link it. I mean, the mad scientist storyline isn't big enough to really say, hey, maybe this was a different movie. And plus, it all kind of ties in at the end with them harvesting people's bodies for their blood. But I guess what their plan was, they were trying to figure out a cure of some sort.
That makes okay.
But yes.
Yeah, this movie. Not as much 80s as Return of the Living Dead, but it does let you know what decade you are in
while you're watching this movie. So I was watching it while I was making dinner today, and Lynn, my wife, was in that here, and she wasn't listening to it because I was watching. She was listening to it, but I was watching it on my iPad, so she heard it but wasn't watching it. She's like, "Is this movie from the 80s?" I was like, yeah. And then, like, Girls Just Want to Have Fun kicked in. I was like, hey, you asked if it was from the 80s, huh?
I think this movie is more 80s than Return of the Living Dead, though. Don't you think?
I think they're both very 80s.
Oh, 100%. They're both very 80s. I think this one has a slight edge because of the soundtrack.
Soundtrack is very 80s.
And when they're in the mall, right, that's a pretty 80s montage.
Yeah.
Right, and they have the poofy hair and all that. I think Return of the Living Dead, I'm trying to remember parts where I think, like, man, this is an 80s movie. I obviously like the punk kind of look to everybody, and some of the, like, Poindexter, he looked very 80s, right? He looked like he had a Talking Heads kind of vibe to him.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason I just think this slight edge over the Return of the Living Dead.
It could be two sides of the 80s coin,
sure.
Sort of.
Sure.
You know, the punk, you know,
punks
look and all.
Preppies.
Yeah, and this was more poppy, right? This is more pop. And they had, was it Asteroid in this game? This movie? Right. Yeah. What's her name? Regina's playing Asteroids at the very beginning at the movie theater.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's pretty 80s.
And someone actually being worried about their high score at an arcade.
That's true.
As she is.
Was she like one of the original gamers, Regina?
Yeah.
Like female gamers?
Yep.
I can't think of...
blazing a trail.
In movies, probably.
Right?
I
can't really think of many others. Not that I know a whole lot of female gamers in movie history.
Yeah. But and that's it.
Yeah, or maybe when did what was that movie with the Power Glove?
The Wizard.
The Wizard. What did that come out before this? I don't know.
1989.
Oh, okay. So yeah, Regina reigns supreme. I'm gonna coin that. Catherine Mary Stewart, the original female gamer.
There you go.
Yeah. Just thinking in my head, I can't think of anything. Any time where they've had an arcade in a movie, even before or even after, for the most part, where, you know, it was mainly shown as a woman trying to get the high score. I mean, there might be something in Karate Kid when they go on that date, but I'm not 100% sure. I don't remember that part of that movie well, but...
I have no idea.
The only one I could think of off the top of my head... Used...
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think this movie could have used Tom Atkins in it.
Absolutely.
And it would be like the ultimate 80s movie. This movie.
Yeah.
If Tom Atkins was Hector.
Oh, man.
That'd be so great.
He would have nailed all the chicks in it. So
yeah.
It would have been very weird. Yeah, that's true. And the scientist.
Yep.
And
it would have been great.
Not the nailing part, but just having Tom Atkins in it in general is.
What?
It's always a treat.
What's wrong with the nailing part?
Nothing really. I'm just trying not to come off as like weird, you know, because like, listen, I'm with you 100% on that. But for the audience, I don't want them to be like, all right, well, now you know, it's just a couple creeps talking about Tom Atkins.
Hey, if there is one thing people want, some mid-80s Tom Atkins railing chicks.
I always, whenever I think of Tom Atkins in any movie, really, I'm always reminded of that scene in The Wedding The Wedding Singer, when Adam Sandler's best friend was like, it got kind of depressing to watch Henry Winkler at 50 years old hitting on teenage chicks. And that's essentially Tom Atkins.
No way.
All right. Hey, listen, that's just how I, because he's got the gray hair and the mustache, and he's always getting chicks who are clearly out of his league. Hey, I guess that's the allure of Tom Atkins.
Dennis Quaid can marry a 26-year-old at 65. Tom Atkins can rail some chicks in a post-apocalyptic world.
Again, I'm with you 100% of the way, but this is really just it's an illusion I'm trying to put on.
Movie magic.
Exactly. But yeah, if you have Tom Atkins in a movie, I'm all in.
Yeah. Tom Atkins is not in this movie, but Catherine Mary Stewart, Kelly Maroney, and Robert Beltram were. As mentioned, directed by Tom Eberhardt, who also directed Captain Ron. That's about it.
I like that movie.
And has
not
an
the only
IMDb,
one, I guess.
Has an IMDb score of 6.4 and a Rotten Tomato score of 77. So solid.
Yeah, this movie, like you said, was a sneaky hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it made a budget, $700,000. And what did you say? What did you say? $14 million. $14 million. My numbers are different, but maybe
I'm looking on IMDb.
Oh, I wrote down the weekend gross, opening weekend.
Oh, that
gross
was
3.5 gross.
Yeah, I mean that's still awesome.
$14.4 million. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that is hefty.
Yeah, that's
hefty for. I want to see. Bear with me. I'm going to try and see if I can find any additional numbers on Box on Mojo.
This was originally this was essentially the original Paranormal Activity, right?
Right.
Because it wasn't Paranormal Activity made for like $7 million and then made like $100 million or something like that.
Something crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, those numbers are probably way off, but I know it was a low budget and it made a ton of money. I'm surprised this didn't have a sequel.
Yeah, right. It released on the weekend of November 16th. It opened number 3 behind Missing in Action. I think that's starring Chuck Norris. And second place was Oh God, You Devil, starring George Burns.
Oh, wow.
Not a great weekend at the box office.
No.
Slow weekend. If you lose to Chuck Norris, I think that's a problem if you lose to Chuck Norris.
That has a very solid second weekend. Grossed 3.2 in its second weekend.
That's hardly.
The word of mouth was good.
Yeah. Right. That's hardly a dip.
Yep. Hardly a dip. 9.7% dip.
Yeah, and there's no story behind the producers pocketing the profit, is there? Like, there are.
I haven't seen them. I haven't come across any of it.
Your mind just went to a weird place, Mark.
No, because isn't that one...
You don't trust anyone.
Was that one movie we saw that the producers, basically... Was it Masters of the Universe?
I think maybe.
Yeah, you know, that's right.
They just took all the profits.
That's true. Hopefully that wasn't the case here, and I don't think it was. I'm not seeing anything about it.
No.
These people are on the level.
Yeah. The good people at Coleman Roseblatt Productions.
wonder what they're up to today.
I don't know. But Tom Eberhardt's still alive, so that's good.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Probably not being in business, I'd imagine, is what they're up to.
Yeah. He also wrote Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
No. Oh.
It's a good movie.
Yep. That's about it. He also did a direct to TV movie called Rats with a Z, where two rats into hunks for their dates to their dance. And I had seen that multiple times when I was 14.
You did?
Yes.
So now, like, That movie. Did you like it?
Wait, so you when I was 14, yeah.
You must have. So listen.
It was about two girls my age that were kind of cute. So.
Okay, well, just real quick, I'm gonna kind of, for the listeners at home, Anthony and I almost got into an argument this past weekend about There Will Be Blood, and I was not a fan of it, and Anthony was, he was very condescending towards me.
As I do.
Yeah, as you do. And now I feel justified because you like rats.
Well, no, when I was 14. When I was 14, I watched it multiple times.
Yeah, you were old enough to make a conscious decision to watch this movie multiple times.
Dan, it's not the same as saying that There Will Be Blood sucks. That's something a dumb person would say.
Again, I feel vindicated right now. A huge weight has lifted off my chest, and I feel good now. The person that I was arguing with likes rats.
Man, I named this website after Pootie Tang. I mean, come on.
For a man who, you know, he went to school for film, I highly respect your take on film and on cinema. It's like Martin Scorsese, then you.
I haven't weighed in on Marvel whether or not it's cinema yet.
I think it's boiling over, and if you weigh in, it could blow up. I think it'll be the tipping point for good or for worse. But yeah, listen, I respect you, but then you come out with trash like this.
I mean,
and it makes me wonder.
I mean, any movie that's good enough for Ron Silver is good enough for me.
Right, exactly.
Hey, I love how Anthony and I usually see eye to eye on most things, but when we don't, oh my God, it's like I killed your dog or something.
No, I just, you know, stay in your lane, Dan. That's all. Stay in my lane. Why don't you just be on that side, dribbling the basketball, you know.
Stick to Batman, right?
Stick to basketball, Dan.
Listen, I'm gonna make a rats themed D&D one shot now, just for you, Ant.
Excellent. I will play the shit out of that.
You should know by now that any attempt to try to embarrass him, he will just 100% buy in.
Absolutely. I will not. No, I will double down on my love for rats.
God, there's a character named Scooter in that movie. Shame on you. Shame on you. Scooter.
Yeah, they turn rats into hunky boys to take to prom. What is not to like about that premise?
Like, impossible to argue with you. All right. Let's get to the plot. Let's wrap this goddamn thing up.
Okay. I think it's time to get into the plot. Before we do, we are going to take a moment to listen to a word from a friend of the podcast, so we will be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Steve.
And this is Adam.
And we're part of the Hop Nation USA podcast,
Pittsburgh's number 3 craft beer podcast.
Join us every Friday for new beer reviews.
We'll talk about the news, history, and homebrewing.
Plus, we'll sit down with the best brewers and industry personalities that'll have us.
So whether you're a casual drinker, a hazy boy hophead,
or even if you're a whale-hunting cellar hoarder,
just search Hop Nation USA on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher and join the nation.
Welcome back. We are just about to get into the plot for Night of the Comet. So it's present day, 1984, and everybody is super jazzed about a comet that's supposed to be coming close towards Earth. Yeah. Hasn't been around in 65 million years.
Yeah, the thing I want to jump into, because it's right at the beginning, it took me a while to not think, and they may have done this, but I thought they were like intersplicing like stock footage of like New York City Times Square.
Yeah, it's like New Year's Eve.
It felt very New Year's Eve. It is the holiday time. It's technically Christmas time.
Yeah.
But definitely could have been a bunch of stuff that they pulled stock footage from they also could have pulled stock footage from Halley's Comet celebrations, because that was around the same time. They even mentioned Halley's Comet briefly in this movie. I think that might have been the 70s, late 70s. But it was either they pulled stock footage of that or New Year's Eve.
Okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah,
the Halley's Comet thing.
There were just specific signs that would have been hard to fake. They were specific about comets. So
yeah.
That's the only reason why I bring up Halley's Comet in that aspect.
Okay. I could have sworn it was it just had that New Year's Eve vibe to it.
The whole first day or first night feels like it's New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. Just because there seems to be like this energy of like, all right, well, we got to get home. There's a party going on basically and all that kind of shit. But really, because we hear Christmas music later on, I assume it's not Christmas hasn't come yet.
Right. It's probably like right around the corner.
Yeah. They don't deliberately say what day it is, but we have references to Santa Claus and we got some Christmas music again. So I'm assuming this is like mid-December.
That makes sense.
Because it's L.A.
We alluded to this earlier. I think I heard you guys say that, or you alluded to this earlier, but it's all movie magic. But for L.A., there is hardly anyone around at this time.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, we talked about that while you were indisposed, basically. They just shot at the as early as they could and held up traffic at stoplights to get those shots of the abandoned streets. And that's how they got that.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah,
it's well done. That's what I mean. Like, it definitely has that B-movie feel to it where there's L.A., which is known for some of the worst traffic in the world, but there's only one car at a light.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little so, but listen, you give credit where credit's due. They did their best.
We are introduced to our hero, Regina Belmont, who is working at a movie theater, and she is cracking the high scores of her Asteroids game. She has like every single high score except for one, which we never find out who that person is. I thought it was going to wind up being Hector.
How crazy would that have been?
Yeah.
But there's so she gets like kind of pissy that this person is on. So she's supposed to have all 10 high scores, and then there's one person that makes like in the middle somewhere. She gets pissy because she doesn't have all the high scores anymore.
Yeah.
I think it was George Costanza.
George Costanza.
Yeah.
Instead of doing her job, she was more worried about this high score.
I mean, she's getting minimum wage in 1984. She's getting like $2 an hour.
Right, and it's a movie theater. I don't blame her for not being, you know, all gung-ho about doing whatever she's supposed to be doing there.
Yeah. We meet her, and then we meet her sister, played by Kelly Maroney, named Samantha. She's a cheerleader, and she gets the taste knocked out of her mouth by her stepmom.
Man, go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
I was going to say the slap looked real good. The punch, not so much.
No.
But she goes flying back.
Yeah.
Like, what's her name? Dolores?
Doris.
Doris. Yeah, Doris just, she cold clocks her, man.
Just real punches her right in the mouth.
Yeah. And she doesn't hold back, apparently.
Yeah. So I guess the family situation is that their parents... their father remarried, and he's like a government agent or something, or a government worker in the U.S. government. And he then disappears to supposedly Honduras, and he kind of hasn't been back in quite a long time. And now they're living with her stepmother, and the stepmother's kind of walking out on the dad while he's gone. So she's
obviously.
Yeah. She's entertaining the neighbor man. More or less.
And she doesn't even make any qualms about it. Like, yeah, you know, I do that. He's a very friendly guy, the neighbor.
I think it was like they never really explicitly say how long the dad has been gone, have they?
No, but they make it seem like he's been away frequently at best.
Yeah, because Regina kind of makes reference to it where she's just like she think like Samantha's oblivious. She thinks our dad's gonna walk in and save us with the Marines.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And then I guess like it seemed like Regina at the very beginning is just kind of like, dad's gone. He's not coming back.
It's kind of odd because when you hear that story, it's usually to like a 5-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you know, dad's going to come back anytime. Now, like, Regina and Samantha are, you know, in their teens, like 18. Yeah. So
Samantha's 16.
Okay. So yeah. they're old enough to realize, yeah, dad's might not be coming back.
Yeah. I think it might be in an effort to make her seem younger, just because the actress playing her was 24 at the time. So it is okay. A thing where it's like, all right, well, I don't know if she's really pulling off 16, but maybe we could throw some dialogue in there.
She's out there Luke Perrying it.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, she could have pulled up, probably could have pulled up 18 and then had just Regina be a little bit older, like 20. Yeah. You know?
I thought she was, she looked like a teenager, like older teenager. So, but again, she was what, 21, we said?
24.
24. Okay. So not too far off.
So we get some home life conversations, and Regina is not interested in going back home. So she's going to spend the night in the observatory with her boyfriend, semi-boyfriend. And they have sex in there. But specifically, what's good to know about this projection room that they're in is that it's steel-lined, which becomes a thing. They're in the projection room in the movie theater. The mom is going to spend all night at the observatory with her boyfriend. So Larry, the projectionist, is the guy she has sex with. Regina.
Doesn't it sound like she does it willingly, really? You know, yeah, what I mean? Like, it is willingly, but it's just like she's very hesitant about it. And then the worst part is she gets paid.
Yeah.
So that's kind of yikes. That's a big yikes.
80 sexual politics creeping up here a little bit. There's kind of like, seems like there's some coercion going on. Not necessarily completely, not completely devious, but like it kind of seems like it's owed to him a little bit.
It's definitely hashtag cringeworthy, or just cringe. Yeah. Right, as the kids say, it's off. Something's off about it, because you could tell she's not very happy.
Yeah, she's just kind of like, oh, I guess this is what we have to do.
Right.
This is what's expected of me.
Yeah, not a good start to the movie.
No.
You have a stepmother beating the shit out of her stepdaughter, and then the main character is just like, $15 for sex, whatever, I guess.
It's the 80s.
Is that really an excuse, though? I mean, I don't know, Mark. That's iffy. At best, that's iffy.
Yeah. So they have sex and they spend the night there. Samantha leaves home after she gets cold cocked right in the face. She runs off. The comet hits, or the comet passes by, and Regina and her boyfriend wake up. He's kind of waiting for somebody to return a film. And when somebody knocks on the door, he thinks it's that person. When he opens it, some sort of zombie person carries him out, and I assume eats him, with Regina none the wiser what just happened. So
yeah, because she was, wasn't she downstairs getting that guy off the high score?
Yeah. She goes back to the Asteroids game. And she's playing that. Meanwhile, her boyfriend's getting eaten. So he kind of disappears on her, and she doesn't know what happened. She goes outside, and she looks for him and is surprised to see motorcycle still sitting there that he owned. And then a zombie pops out at her, and she uses her self-defense training to get away, and then jumps on the motorcycle and takes off. She's driving through the LA streets and noticed that there's nobody on the road, and there's a whole bunch of red dust everywhere, but no people on the sidewalks, no one on the streets. There are a whole bunch of clothes just out in the middle of everything. But eventually she makes it home and finds Samantha there, but not her stepmom and nor the neighbor man. Then go ahead, Mark.
No, I was going to say that this is the scene where she's like trying to explain to Samantha that something's going on, and she's making all the excuses, and then she does one of my favorite moments in the movie is when she picks up the shoe and then dumps out all the sand.
Here's the neighbor. Bam. Yeah, it was again.
And then the sister just slowly closes the door.
Yeah. But now, like, so here's maybe like one of the problems I have with this movie. We're about like 25 minutes in at this point, I'd say, give or take, and like nothing scary has happened. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I would say that this movie is not scary.
Yeah, so maybe that's one of the things I realized. Like, man, it's kind of dragging a little bit. It really doesn't pick up until maybe an hour or so, like maybe a little less than an hour, 35, 40 minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have liked to have seen a little bit more zombie action. And the zombies talk, and they don't talk very well. It's like a discount scorpion. Get over here.
Yeah. I think that's one of the main things that the one says to them.
Right. And she's like, get over here, my ass. And it's... dynamite dialogue.
So she has trouble convincing Samantha. Eventually they're like, well, there's nobody else here, and then they hear a voice on the radio come on, and they're like, oh, well, that guy's still here, maybe we could find the radio announcer, and maybe there's something going on that we could link up with him, basically. So they head there, and the only thing they find is that it's completely automated. He's just on tapes, basically. So he's gone for probably forever, but was only planning for the weekend. They run into Hector, who was a truck driver who spent the night in the back of his steel trailer.
Yeah.
Again, coming up back to steel. Samantha slept in a steel shed, which is how she survived the night.
I'll admit this is the first time I made that link in this when I saw the movie this time.
Okay.
I was like, oh, and that explains it a lot more than what I was thinking.
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
I was thinking like everybody was inside was fine. And I was like, wait, no, there'd be a lot more people alive if that was true.
Yeah,
sure. Hector talks about how he spent the night with some girl that he picked up, and she went crazy. She panicked. She ran off. She got eaten by some zombies. Then he came to the radio station to see if anyone had survived. And they, you know, they have a kind of frosty relationship in the beginning because he kind of pulls a gun on them. So the girls are not too keen about that, although Samantha seems like she's fine. She starts getting on the radio and starts talking out there to anybody that could listen. Eventually, she gets a call from some scientists at a bunker that they advise her that the comet has caused most of the population to turn to dust, and the people who only got partial exposure will turn to zombies before they succumb to the same fate. They tell her to stay where she is, and they'll come to rescue them in the morning. They start to warm up to Hector. All of a sudden, Hector is God's gift to ladies, and he is the most eligible bachelor that these two girls have ever come across. Even though he's kind of a chubby Latino guy, he is a very average looking dude, which I guess fits the character, but it is just kind of funny because they start falling for him just because he's like not a zombie.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. And if you're there, you're there.
I mean, any port in a storm, but it's been like 8 hours.
True. Everyone has needs, man. Everyone has the same needs.
Yeah, and girls didn't fall that.
And I love their adherence to monogamy in this, where the sister gets upset. She's like, "You stole him. Now I can't have him."
Yeah, right. They got to propagate the species. They got to repopulate the earth. Hector's going to be busy. The girl's looking to catch dick.
The soul is willing, but the flesh is weak. That's going to be Hector at one point.
Yeah.
Well, to put this back on a PG rating kind of turf, I'd say. I think the problem with Hector is he's just not a good actor. The guy playing Hector is kind of boring. They don't have good chemistry. There's no chemistry there, even when they kind of soften up to each other. And it's to me, I didn't believe it, man. All right, I didn't believe that Regina really liked Hector.
Yeah. No, I get that totally. He is not a very good actor, and he's not long for this world either. He's here and then he's gone for a while and comes back at the end.
Probably for the best, Right, because they just focus on Regina and Samantha, and that is, again, they're not that they're, you know, gangbusters over here, but they're decent. They have good chemistry together.
Yep, absolutely. Because Hector mentions that he needs to go to San Diego, and he needs to make sure that, you know, he needs to see if his mom survived. So he has kind of like this romantic moment with Regina, which is literally the second day they've known each other. And then he kind of goes off. This is where Samantha kind of gets a little jealous of Regina stealing all her boys from her. And then she's got nobody now that there's like the last people on Earth. But literally, as we've mentioned, they need to repopulate the species. So right. Hector's going to be busy with both of them.
Real quick, have you guys ever imagined being in that scenario?
Like what? Just
like
being
just
one
you...
guy to the two last girls on Earth?
Right, it's like the last man on Earth kind of scenario.
Sure, probably.
Yeah, it scares me.
Scares you?
I've thought about it before, and I know deep down I am not up to that task, and
the task of repopulating the species?
No, it's not in me. I would fail.
Give it one hell of a try, though, won't you?
Maybe. I'd still get rejected. Like, yeah, you're the last man, but. Listen, me too, all right? Lay off, bud, all right?
They're like, well, if we're the last two people on the Earth, maybe it's just time for humans to die. Give something else a chance.
Right. That's where my mind goes with the apocalypse. Like, yeah, I'd still have problems.
So he goes. Then we get some scenes with the scientists. They are arguing over what they should be doing. They don't want to. One doesn't want to bring outsiders into the bunker. The other ones say that they kind of don't have a choice. And we see that they have already brought in a couple of other survivors, which are a young boy and girl. Samantha and Regina. They find a local military armory. I guess because their father, they knew where to find that, and they take some automatic weapons to defend themselves, and they already know how to shoot, so they kind of show off their shooting abilities at a car. But Samantha's getting pretty depressed about the situation. She starts talking about people that she knows died, her friends at school. So to cheer her up, Regina takes her shopping, which is a shopping montage taken straight out of Dawn of the Dead.
I kind of got that feeling from this. I thought that's where the movie was going to head towards, because what happens next is very reminiscent of the biker gang that comes through. So I thought,
about the Stock Boys?
That's exactly who I'm talking about.
The Stock Boys is the moment where this movie takes a ridiculously hilarious turn.
Yeah, those guys are easily the most fun part of the movie, I'll say.
Yes, because they are wacky. And that guy's got some choice lines. So they start chasing them through the mall. Basically, there's like three Stock Boys who now they own the store. It's the American dream.
Essentially, they were there first, right?
Yeah, they were there first. But that I guess that's how they survived. They were probably in the stock room.
Yeah.
But I love his line. It was like, well, we were Stock Boys, and now we own the place. It's the American dream.
Yeah. Well. They had a low bar, I guess.
Yeah, right.
From lowly stock boy to owning the entire store.
You know, that's the upward mobility you could expect in the Reagan 80s.
Yeah, listen, they saw an opportunity, they took advantage, and good for them. Right?
Trickle-down economics at its best.
They probably got it at a great price, too.
Yeah. Yep. So they have like a tussle with them. They take Samantha as a hostage, and Regina is able to take one of them as a hostage. But the main stock boy, I don't even know what to call him.
Stock boy one, I guess.
The head stock boy.
Yeah.
Head stock boy, as it says in the plot synopsis, taunts them, and he goes nuts, and she takes one of the guys hostage, and he's like, I can't have you taking one of my guys hostage. And so he shoots that guy, And she says, you're crazy. And then he says, I'm not crazy. I just don't fucking give a shit or something.
I think it's I just don't give a fuck anymore.
I just don't give a fuck. Yeah.
I think that's really, there should have been more characters like that in this movie. Because when you're faced with the apocalypse, it's just like everything goes out the window, all logic and sanity. So this guy really, he embodied the apocalypse, in my opinion.
Yep.
And I would have rather have seen a movie with him.
Yeah. I think he was crazy and he was fun. So they take them both prisoner and he makes them, he does a little bit of Russian roulette sort of thing with them. And he's about to pull the trigger before he does, the scientists come with, I guess, mercenary troops, and they shoot all the stock boys and they kill them. So the scientists successfully save the girls. I guess they realize they were at the mall, because what else are teenagers going to be but the mall?
I think one of the scientists even says that. If I was a teenage delinquent, where would I go? And it's the mall. So this was definitely a slight against mall culture, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. So the scientists take Regina back to their bunker, but they keep behind Samantha because I guess she's showing that she's been partly exposed. So they keep her behind with one of the female scientists, who tells her that she's got an injection for her that should clear that right up, but it's supposed to kill her. And she goes to sleep, and we're presuming that she's dead. At this point, Hector shows back up at the radio station, and he sees Samantha unconscious.
You left out the most important part.
Go ahead.
Dressed as Santa Claus.
Dressed as Santa Claus, yep. Because it's Santa
Claus.
That was
a weird part. I didn't understand that part.
They really didn't lean into the Christmas aspect of this.
Right. And then there's definitely Christmas aspects. So it's like they wanted to sprinkle it in.
Right.
But they just didn't go full Christmas.
They didn't go full Die Hard.
Yes.
Yes.
Because
yes.
This is like Lethal Weapon.
Right. Yeah, there's just sprinkles of Christmas cheer in there. You know, a song here, some tinsel there, a guy dressed as Santa.
Not the Batman has Forever.
The plot has nothing to do with Christmas.
No. Yeah, it doesn't revolve around Christmas.
Right.
It's just Christmas time.
Yep. So he shows up, and the female scientist is there, and she injects herself with something, the same thing that she gave to Samantha. She kind of has like a little death monologue right before she passes out, just saying that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and just like the guy in Reanimator, she left behind her research and notes.
My notes.
I am just looking up through the plot synopsis.
The plot.
Just a little bit.
Well, I think at this point, one of the doctors is interviewing Regina, right, just to like see if she had any history of like sickness or anything like that.
Yeah, so he specifically starts asking her things about like hepatitis.
Yeah.
It goes on for far too long.
Is she pregnant? All that.
Is she pregnant? Yeah. So basically, he's asking her about things specific to blood.
Blood. Yeah.
As we learn, he gets annoyed that she's kind of like not taking it seriously. So he gets up and leaves, and she's like, "Well, I want to see my sister," and he's like, "She's dead."
for a bunch of scientists, these people are dumb.
Yeah,
they make a lot of questionable decisions.
Yeah, I think they try to explain that away by saying that overcoming with the sickness is sort of making them forget things. So I think that was their way of explaining it. Death monologue. I think that's one scientist said.
And it just affects your brain.
Yeah, that's why she wrote everything down for Hector.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So that. That's right, because they were exposed, right? Someone left the air ducts open.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, I guess their plot is they're basically harvesting survivors that haven't been uncontaminated for their blood, but they, in order to extract more blood from them, they're making them brain dead rather than killing them, because that way they'll continue to produce more blood.
Right. Genius plan, if you think about it.
It's not a bad plan, to be honest. If you're a mad scientist and you're faced with possible death because you're contaminated, you could do a lot worse than this one.
Right. The math checks out.
Yep, and Blade 3 basically stole the plot.
There you go. This movie is because of Blade. This movie made Blade 3, which I guess is terrible.
Which makes me not like it even more.
Yeah. So they're planning to basically use these kids as blood farms. And Regina starts to go. Hector arrives and he plans to rescue her. Using a Texas accent. He's pretending he's an American, I guess.
I think he is American, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, she has this really one choice line at the beginning about how his gun might work for, what is it? Might work for a barrio first date or something like that.
That's right. In El Barrio. Yeah.
The barrio, but. And then you're going to need something a little bit bigger.
And Samantha says he might be a homosexual, but the very, like the not nice way of saying that.
Yeah, she casually drops that.
She drops the F word.
Yes.
The hard R.
Yeah, so I think the line is something like, one of the only men left alive, he's either a gentleman or a gay guy.
Yeah, again, the
80s. That I will chalk up to the 80s because I think people were definitely a little bit more free with their slander, I guess.
Beginning of the AIDS scare.
It's very true. Yep.
There we go. Yeah. It turns out that Samantha is fine. Audrey only gave her a sedative. I don't know why. I guess that was one of the points between the scientists, I guess, was that she wasn't down with killing them.
Okay, that's right.
So she just made them look like she had killed her.
Right.
Yeah. So she had just given her a sedative, so she fell asleep, and then Audrey, who is the female scientist, killed the other guy after she said that she had killed Audrey.
They should have just dubbed over Hector's voice in this whole scene with the guy from Star Crash.
Because he shows up at the bunker.
Yeah,
with a very thick southern accent.
Yeah,
Texas probably.
Yeah,
L probably. My seatbelt stuck.
Have you been to L.A. recently? Oh, it's a goner.
Traffic makes me nervous.
it's very strange. It doesn't add anything. He could have just talked like himself.
He really could have.
Right, because nothing's gonna change, right? Yeah.
The only thing that was slightly different was that he was very friendly. But he could have been just as friendly with his own accent.
Right. He'd never seen the security guard there. Right.
Yeah. So I don't. The guard has no idea what your accent is. I don't know why.
Yeah. Maybe he was just like workshopping it. You know. Like yeah. Right. I know. When we, in this new life, I'm gonna try to do a southern accent.
Yeah.
Be like, completely different me.
Someone's going to need to voice over cartoons in this new world.
Right. I better get a cracking on it.
Why not me?
So I think that's the best case scenario, really.
Yeah. So they attempt an escape. Samantha and Hector break out Regina. And Regina, you know, doesn't want to leave those kids behind. Those kids that are expecting to go see Santa Claus, because that's what the scientists told them.
Well, the one kid doesn't believe in Santa.
Yeah.
And then the one scientist gets like really upset by that.
Don't believe in Santa.
And then they just dare you piece of shit.
Where's the imagination in this child?
And the problem, like, he's a scientist. He probably should have been all about it. Like, yeah, you know, he's right. There's no Santa. You're a very smart
reason
kid.
And logic is the only thing that I believe in.
Right. Right. It's the only that's the gift that really keeps on giving all year round.
Reason and logic, kids.
Reason and logic.
That'll
don't let your parents fool you.
That'll put gifts under your tree every year.
That's very, very true.
So they break out with the kids and they drive off. I think the scientists blow up in their truck because Hector sabotages their car. So Hector is a murderer.
Well, they were also, it was self-defense.
They started turning into zombies too.
Sabotaging a car to blow up doesn't sound like self-defense to me, if I'm being completely honest.
Well, I guess I take it as, I mean, they were going to kill kids and Regina.
Sure.
Right.
I mean, so it's a whole new world. Rules have changed, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. There's no law.
Yeah. And then they head back to LA. It starts to rain, and the rain washes away all the dust. And they become sort of like a family, a ragtag family. And Regina starts dressing like an 1800s socialite with like necks all the way up to her chin. And then Samantha goes the other way, starts dressing like an 80s mall girl. And then we get a scene where she comes across another dude.
Yeah.
The end with a Mercedes Benz almost hits her while she's crossing the street.
That would have been a good ending.
Yeah.
Right. All of a sudden just gets plowed right into it. Like, oh, we're a family now. Hong Kong. Boom. Yeah. Oh, God. No.
Becomes Final Destination all of a sudden.
Right.
The guy's name is Danny Mason Keener, and in his short time, he has one of my favorite lines in this movie. She says, "Nice car you got there." And he's like, "Thanks. I got 19 of them."
A little humble brag there.
And then he invites her for a ride, and she drives off with the guy she doesn't even know, but he was moderately handsome, so it's fine.
Better looking than Hector.
Yeah, she definitely was like, she played the waiting game, so it's all good.
Yeah, she won that battle,
and she's still only 16. Come on. Yeah. Hector don't do that. Hector's yeah. like 30 years old.
Regina settled.
Yeah. Regina's 18, so she's just legal.
Yeah. But again, no law, right?
She's a whole new world.
Samantha even says the legal drinking age is now lowered to 10 years old. So
that's true.
So I can only imagine what that means for everything else.
We don't need to get into that stuff.
Nope.
We won't.
We will just assume that it's the legal, that age is still 18.
Yeah, and everyone is a gentleman.
Yep, and everyone will adhere to that.
Yes. This movie really bored me. There's not a lot in it.
I'm disappointed because you were excited to watch this movie.
I was. And, again, just a weird day for me. I don't know what it was, but I watched it, and it didn't click for me today. I wanted it to.
It's disappointing.
Yeah, listen, they're not all going to be winners, man.
That is true. What would you do anything to make this movie better in your eyes?
Make it scarier. I'd probably have more zombies in it. Yeah. They're never really in any danger outside of the stock boys.
Yeah, sure. It is kind of, there are very low stakes in this movie, I will say.
Right. And I think they were kind of going for more of a maybe more comedy feel than a scary feel for it, and that's fine. It's one of those movies, and they were plentiful in the 80s. I never felt like there was in any danger, and the characters aren't all that great. Like Hector is kind of boring. Samantha and Regina have their moments, but again, it's just kind of like it's girls just want to have fun, the Cyndi Lauper song, right? That's what I kind of took from this. And that's fine. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have fun. Ladies, feel free to have as much fun as you want. You don't need my permission. Yeah. But just in terms of the movie, I wasn't really... I wasn't invested, I'll say.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so my only improvements really, and I haven't really thought deep enough to know exactly what I would do, but everything comes back to I would have done something different about the... You know, the scientist subplot, sort of side, you know, second half of the movie. Maybe either flesh that out a little bit more or have it be introduced from the beginning of the movie instead of just coming in the middle. You know, just something that if you're going to keep it, try to integrate it more early. But if not, maybe find a different, you know, subplot, maybe make it a more ghost town like feel than like a even a Zombieland did, you know. Sort of, you could have went with that and made it more ghost town feeling though, and had more. Well, obviously on the budget they couldn't do this, but you know, more cars on the street, you know, maybe more signs of life being there at some point. Things would have been nice, but yeah, I think if we're just taking structurally how this movie was produced, I would have found a way to integrate the scientist research center part into it more. Like I was semi thinking that Hector was going to be a double agent at the end when he stopped the car and turned around.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. I feel like there's no real arcs to anybody's storyline.
Probably not.
And that's probably what I would do. To Mark's point, I think the scientists could probably have been more of an antagonist throughout, because as Dan said, there's very low stakes in this movie. There's hardly any kind of back and forth except for the couple of zombies we see, and then the stock boys play another role of that. So yeah, it is lacking in that. But I have fun with this movie for whatever reason. As Dan said, he can't pinpoint really why he didn't like it this movie this go around, and I can't really pinpoint why I like it so much.
It's one of those movies. It's like an outlier, you know. Yeah. You don't know what it is about it. You either like it or you hate it.
But I enjoy this one.
Just like Rats.
Rats. Telling you, we'll do an episode on Rats whenever there's another movie that comes. Whenever there's a movie that comes out that has something to do with girls turning rats into hunky boys to take to dance a school dance, we will do the original version of that movie, which is called Rats from 2000.
Okay. I'm going to write that movie.
I'm all for it.
Get it made just for the sheer fact of doing that podcast.
Yeah. So, Tom Eberhart, you got another one under your belt coming soon.
Dust off that old script. Yeah. Let's do this.
I think that's going to take us to the end of this podcast. I don't have anything. I don't have anything for us in terms of trivia or anything like that.
No, so, that's fine.
Do you guys have any pluggables?
Sure. You know, the usual shtick. My Twitter is at daquino122. Follow me there. I usually just retweet things about the main Damie, so nothing great. And I'm a bitter Yankee fan, so you'll see a lot of bitter Yankee posts about the World Series. But also follow our Real Play Dungeons & Dragons Twitter at Stranger Damies, which I help run. And that's it.
Yeah. And then Stranger Damies, we're going to probably air on Thursday this week, just trying to make it. I didn't realize how close we were to Halloween, and I'm trying to get the one shot to be this week and next week. So we're in the process of getting that uploaded for me to be able to edit. So that'll probably come out on Thursday instead of normal Wednesday. But that'll line it up to be a perfect back-to-back next week with the second half of that one shot. Coming up on Wednesday, and then our special Halloween episode of this podcast will air the next day. So just be on the lookout. Yeah, the Halloween one shot was real good. I do enjoy being on the other side of the table and being able to show off some of that chemistry and improv moments that me and Dan can have out there, even though my bits sometimes get lost. That's about it. Do you have anything else?
I guess that's it. We are They Call This a Movie. We are at theycallthismovie.podbean.com. We're also available at all podcast streaming apps, and just search They Call This a Movie. We should pop right up. We are themaindamie.com, and you can find us at themaindamie.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at themaindamie. We are also part of Geek Vibes Nation, who is a great partner in this, and they have some great shows besides this one, where you can find at gvnation.com or Geek Vibes Nation on all social media platforms and podcast streaming apps. Just look for Geek Vibes Nation. They got just about a podcast for any kind of geek thing you're into. So check those guys out. Give them a follow. We'll pop up on there. Mark's the Game Vault Pod shows up on that one as well.
And almost forgot, Extra Life will be coming up. We do our 24-hour gaming marathon. That'll be November 16th at 9 a.m. We'll start off with a live edition of Stranger Damies with that. And just quickly, you can donate at tinyurl.com/extralife4. That's the number 4. You can donate there. We're trying to get to our goal of $500 to benefit the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. So we look forward to it. You can donate anytime between now and the end of the year. Or you can wait until we're live on the air and, reward us for, hanging in there for 24 hours. It's always for the kids doing that.
Mm-hmm. And you can, if you have any questions or comments for anything you want, themaindaming@gmail.com. Give us some suggestions of movies to watch. Tell us how much you love the movie Rats with a Z.
Jesus.
Tell us where to find it in case we want to watch it. Our Gmail, our box is open, so feel free to email us anything stupid.
That's 100% going to happen now. It's the only time that it's ever going to happen. I know it. I feel it.
So if you love the movie Rats, please drop us a line at themaindaming@gmail.com.
Please don't. I would lose all faith in humanity.
All right. We are going out of here. I'm at Aunt Delvec on Twitter. You can follow me there. And that's going to wrap it up. That's our episode on Night of the Comet. Next week we are doing our very special Halloween episode, and we have a poll currently up on our Twitter that is going to decide which movie we are going to cover. Right now the movie in the lead is Friday the 13th. We'll see if that holds true. Would be a pretty nice movie to end on this year. Very sure. An obvious classic I've only seen a couple of times, so it'll be fun to revisit. Hope something good's going to come out of next week as well as this week. Although Dan was a little off his game this week, but he got it back in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I came back. I finished strong.
Yeah, they had us in the first half, not going to lie.
Not going to lie.
And that's going to wrap it up. The director of Night of the Comet is Tom Eberhardt. So for Dan Aquino or Mark Myers, this is Anthony Delvecchio saying, Tom Eberhardt, please go fuck yourself.